All right, friends. Thank you, Matt, for that wonderful presentation. And we are going to go into breakout rooms now. I have placed the questions in the chat, but I'll read them aloud just in case you don't know how to access that. So the first question is, if you were to write a public statement of responsibility of harm, what would it say? You could speak on your own behalf or an organization you're a part of, or your current or previous place of work, or even a spiritual community that you're a part of. Number two, what harmful policies are you aware of that are rooted in white supremacy? It's a pretty clear one. And lastly, in what ways do you see whiteness moving, and how does the power it gives need to be addressed? And what other systems, things with isms are attached to this kind of whiteness? So you'll be in a group of 3 to 4 randomly assigned. Please accept the invitation, and we'll come back probably in about 18 minutes. So just about probably by 11:20. Okay, friends. Well, it looks like everybody's back in the main room. So we're going to move to some time of conversation, some reflection. So if you have any questions or anything you'd like to mention, feel free to, again, you can raise your hand with the participants button and the raise hand feature, or you can try to do it by waving, even though it's hard for me to see all the screens at once, or you can unmute. But we'll begin by one question we got in the chat, Matt, as you were speaking, was if you could define colonialism for everybody, for those of us who may not be apprised to what that term means.
There we go. Yeah, so colonialism is one step up or one step down from imperialism, meaning that you're not creating an empire, but you're creating little colonies. And so you can have colonies all over the world if you just take over the area. But what colonialism you need to do to have power over the area is to eradicate and eliminate the people. So for the purpose of exploiting and doing what you want with the land. So that's the idea of colonialism. It often is predicated by genocide.
Thank you. All right, Matt, there's another question in the chat. How do you imagine reparations taking place?
I think we need to first pass HR 40, which is just the ability to do research on the reparations in our country. But what I believe our work is right now is to build local healing centers. That's the call by national leaders of reparations in 2017. And that's what's really held us held reparations moving forward in South Africa and Canada after their Truth and Reconciliation Commissions. And so we need local healing centers, and reparations is more than just money. It's more than just, hey, here's a lump sum of money for a past wrong. It's not just that. So reparations is spiritual, it's emotional, it's familial, it's communal, it's education, it's workforce, it's honestly one that I've been sitting with lately. Reparations is rest.
Mary, I see a hand up.
Yeah, on this reparations, I became aware of an organization called the National Reparations Trust Fund, which you've probably heard about, Matt. And it was founded by, I think, a white man, but anyone can join and actually give money. But they're connected with another organization called the National African American Reparations Commission. Yeah, and the first, they have like 5-10 steps. The first step is apology, an apology given by the president of the United States to all people. So it's, you don't get down to actually giving money until you get to about number four or five. But I think the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions have a role to play here. And I'm going to ask Judith, probably some of you read an essay by Wesley Morris, who's a Black columnist for the New York Times, and he wrote an essay in July. And it was entitled, "The Reconciliation Must Be Televised." And it's a takeoff on the Truth and Reconciliation Commissions in South Africa and Rwanda and Canada. And he points out, he kind of ends it up by saying, Oprah was made for this. Wow. Ellen was made for this. You know, and both of them live in Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Who was the second one you said?
Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, Ellen.
Gotcha. Yeah. Meghan Markle, the Duchess, lives in Santa Barbara. So I keep thinking, you know, if we could not just have the local, but have, you know, a follow-up on this, it would be helpful because it's a way of truth-telling.
Yeah. I would encourage everyone here that's been really influential for me that reconciliation is not the goal. We need conciliation, and this is by Mark Charles, who says this. He just ran for president. He's a Navajo man. And so we, because reconciliation means a return to good standing, but we just need to be in good standing. It's not a return to, because for Indigenous folk, there is no good, there was no ever good standing. It was always, they were always met with genocide. So there was no good relationship. And there's another famous article that I return people to, especially from the Christian background. Her name is Erna Kim Hackett. And the article is called "Christians Need to Stop Talking About Reconciliation and Talk About White Supremacy." So yes, we need truth commissions. And then out of the truth commissions, we need to be able to make space and address the demands and make way so that the power systems can adequately address those demands. Because in Canada, they had 94 demands come out of that, and they've hardly hit 43 of them. So, and that was 2020, almost 15 years ago now. So, and we can see South Africa, what's going on there. Apartheid's still strong.
Thanks, Matt. We've got just a few more minutes here. So another question from Mike is, we'd really like to hear about Matt's specific efforts at healing through the group that you've begun.
Yeah. Before I do that, I want to give people a chance. Here's some questions that I think are going to move white folks forward. This is particularly white folks. I'm not sure everybody here is white. I would assume not. But this is, I think, just moving the conversation forward for particularly white folks. And then I think for me particularly, I think it's doing what is uncomfortable. So going against those constructs, those habits, those ways of protecting myself. You know, doing that thing that I first entered this room with, of like, I am racist, you know? And so I don't do that everywhere I go. I'm not going around saying that. But what I do mean by that is healing from the shame of the system. This summer, I went through a really deep internalized ableism, freedom, liberation, you could say. And so I have to heal my own body. So, but then I have to also address power. So the biggest thing for me is continuing to push into ways that we address power. And the one of the ways that I'm doing it now is by addressing white dominant institutions. And I think the church is one of those still. And they have a lot of power in our country, surprisingly. You know, it's a place where people still go to commune. And that's a powerful thing. And so I'm addressing the white dominant institutions and power holders. So, and I think the next one is corporations, more than just equity and diversity or diversity and inclusion directors.
Thanks, Matt. Another question from the chat, Maura asks, how can poor white people see how they themselves have been colonized by the elite or by capitalistic forces, or white people from traumatized cultural backgrounds, which is many of us?
Yeah, whew, that's powerful work right there. Tim and I have talked before. This is the lineage work, where we look at our families and where they've come from, and we look at it. There's a famous author, Howard Zinn. He calls it the people's history of the United States. And when we see the people's history, we see the struggle. Another book that is very similar to this, I really enjoy reading. It's called "Of a Different Mirror" by Ronald Takaki. Both of these books are very. I would say the people's history is probably a little more academic, but "Of a Different Mirror" is very accessible. He actually parallels it with Shakespeare's play The Tempest. It's a really great read. But when we understand the struggle in which our families may have went through, whether it's immigration struggles, poverty, racial struggles, like, and then acknowledging, I know some folks here in town, one of his believe it was his father or his grandfather, was a part of the Tulsa Massacre in 1921. And so he's doing his healing work of being a part of that, of his lineage and how that is in his body. So, and then how that has impacted the community in the world. So we have to, it's not just about the self. We have to move about like, oh, it's just about my racist tendencies. It's not just about that, but it's how are we going out and shaping the world? So, and how are we addressing systems of power? I think that's, to me, where the work is going, where the work is and where the work is going to be going. You know, white fragility is great, but your anti-racism work is only as good as the history and the relationships that you know. So starting your first book with white fragility is probably not going to be your best thing. Your anti-racism is only as good as your history and context in which you're drawing from.
Thanks, Matt. All right. I know that we're a couple minutes over now. And so Judith, you're raising your hand there or?
Yeah, Matt, I would hope that you would send on a list. I mean, you've recommended a lot of things for us to look into. Could you put that down so I could send that out to people?
Yeah, I can forward that along.
The references that you quoted. Thanks, yep. Matt. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Judith.
Michael, would you like to close us out this morning?
Thanks, Matt. On behalf of all of us, thank you very much for your presentation today and for joining us. Thanks to Judith for being our fearless leader. And thanks to Tim for keeping us organized and connected during these Zoom chats. But thanks to all of you for investing your time and energy in delving into such a vital subject for the well-being of not just ourselves, but I think our entire nation. We will gather again on Zoom next Thursday at 10 a.m. as usual for session 6 of our series. We'll be hearing from Leslie Colvin, who is a graduate of the Richard Rohr's Living School. She is an author, social commentator, and contemplative activist. I'm interested to hear more what a contemplative activist is. You can read more about Ms. Colvin, as well as information about all our upcoming sessions on our website, Word and Life, all one, small letters, wordandlife.us. You can see what's upcoming ahead of you, and we'll see you next week, hopefully.
Thanks all. Matt, there were lots of clapping hands in the Zoom boxes, just so you know, and there still are, and there's been some comments in the chat also saying thank you, and what a thought-provoking presentation it was. So well
thank
done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Fantastic.
We'll see you all next week.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Take care.
Thank you.
Life-changing, Matt.
Thank you.